Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Humans of Crypto podcast. Tonight, I had the honor, the pleasure of welcoming Lenka Hudakova to the show. We talked about her path in crypto, her history working with MakerDAO, from it being a foundation to now the dissolution of the foundation, working with one of the core units, to the end game, which is the latest phase we are now in. We talked about her inspiration in crypto, what motivates her, her talk at DevConnect, her documentary, just a lot of things. So I hope you enjoy tonight's show, and there's a little surprise for those that listen till the end. To everyone out there, stay free. Welcome everyone to today's show. Hello, hello, welcome.
Hi, Elena. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. How are you?
I'm great. I'm actually feeling quite good today.
Yeah.
Just found out that one of the biggest fraudsters in our industry has been arrested. So,
oh my God, you want to start the podcast with this?
No, it feels good because it just felt too absurd.
That he was not getting arrested, or
yeah,
or
that
or...
there was no consequences for such an obvious
mismanagement.
Yes.
What do you think happened there? Like, from your perspective, from, you know, I know that we always like see all these crazies in crypto, but like, for you, what's your take on this whole FTX SBF fiasco?
I don't really have strong opinions on this either way, but of course, crypto Twitter is entertaining and you always come across a lot of takes. Yeah. Well, maybe it was the money to bribe people and to buy their side has run out. So
that's a lot of money.
And the behavior was just unacceptable to tolerate any longer, and the pressures were too strong, so the wheels had to move on.
Yeah. Were you ever a user of that platform?
No. And I also don't like to be the person who says I told you so, but I think SBF came up into the crypto space after the sushi situation, and I was like, I don't know who's this new person and should we trust him? So yeah, a couple years later.
This year, were you affected at all by any of the big, let's say, CeFi crashes from Celsius, or were you all good? Were you safe there?
So Celsius, I remember I was still managing events at Maker Foundation. And I got this offer for Rune to speak at the event.
Right.
And the topic was seriously CeFi versus DeFi. And there was this guy from Celsius claiming that he actually is a DeFi person.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he was like, no. And so it was very clear to me from the beginning that it's CeFi. Yeah. And it turned out to be one big mess up.
I know. When you organize meetups, what do you recommend to people? Like, when people ask you, like, you know, where do I start? Like, what do you recommend to people?
So in terms of meetups, like for people to organize them?
No, I mean, like, you know, you have beginners coming to your meetup sometimes and they're like, I don't know what to do. Like, I always find that difficult. Like, what do you recommend?
So the first thing is actually persuading these people to RSVP and then actually showing up. And I think sometimes that takes a lot of tries. You might have friends who invite you many times, and then at some point you're going to make it. You often need to deal with the argument like, okay, but I'm not really that kind of person. I don't know much about it. I don't want to go somewhere I don't understand. Like, if you're curious, if you're open-minded, if you want to learn, this is a perfect opportunity for you. So. Yeah. And bringing someone who is your friend is always making this space more friendly and familiar.
Yeah.
And there often are people who are maybe a bit more introverted or shy, that a lot of their interactions happen online, and they actually might need some time to build up the courage to show up at the events. So you might be actually like super nerdy crypto enthusiast, and it might take you years to actually show up.
True. Many people don't show up even though they've been in the space much longer than us. But sorry, my question was more like, because we had FTX, we had Celsius, all that stuff, and I feel like a lot of beginners, when they get in, they gravitate towards those solutions sometimes because convenience, fiat, you know, onboarding, all that good stuff. I find it always tricky. You know, I'm always like, yes, you're a beginner, but own your coins and, you know, private key management. Like sometimes the first step is hard.
So when people actually show up and then they kind of like are looking for advice, I always steer away, if it's a meetup to build a community, I always steer away from like vouching for specific products unless it kind of holds the values I'm trying to educate on. So I always give people options, but if they need a couple of recommendations, I can like give them options to explore, because I haven't found anything wrong about them, or I feel like they hold up to the values of the space that I feel like I belong to. I'm also a co-host of our local Copenhagen Ethereum meetup community. Yeah. And, you know, the COVID, it hit us too. And we had a longer break. And I also had to manage events at Maker. So I had very little time aside to focus on this. But as the COVID was backing off finally after a longer break, and we wanted to revive the community. You know, it takes a long time to build up a community that has been dormant for a long time.
I know. But you have that longevity. You have that amazing longevity as well.
Yeah, the group has like 1,300 members. Yeah, but if you want to revive the community and the habit of having meetups, you might start with 6 people in one of those meetups to begin with. And I've met across like different social situations people who claim that they're like in crypto, and then just finding out that they're in crypto since January, and this is like March I'm speaking to them, and all they did is they bought funds on a centralized exchange, and they don't have a wallet, they don't have any of this. So after we gathered them a couple times to kind of like socialize and get to know each other, we started to educate them on basics.
Yeah.
How to set up a wallet, how to store your private keys, best practices for this and that. One thing we want to avoid is saying, hey, here's this representative from this business or service, they're trying to sell you their solution. It's no. Like, maybe they're experts in a specific area and they're going to educate you on that, but it's not about shilling their products. Mm-hmm. And we should always steer away from that. It's more about education.
Definitely. It's I always find that it's such a hard line. We've haven't had any content per se, well, except what we did at Dev Connect, but our meetups this year were just drinks. So there was no like speakers. But as of January, we were starting with our first privacy meetup and we have speakers, but I am trying to be super conscious of what speakers, what privacy are we talking about? And of course, it's to bring attention to everything that's happening to Alex Bertsev and the Tornado Cash situation.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing this. But like you said, the moment as an organizer, you have a stage, you also have a responsibility to who you put on stage and what you're showcasing and what are we learning here together as a group, you know, so yeah.
And you know, I'm not against sponsors. Like, you need to fund the meetup somehow. Mm. You might need to find a sponsor for the drinks, but you should be very transparent about what you're doing and who is the sponsor here, and who is the expert here, or like, what is the takeaway from this? The way we did it a couple years back when we had the meetup groups that were quite bigger, we called them town halls. We actually created a section to give 1 minute each to projects that are local, And they literally had one slide and 1 minute to speak about their project. It was very clearly disclosed that these are the local projects you can learn more about afterwards. And we gave them the stage, but we never really, you know, kind of sneaked in some promotion. We wanted to give the opportunity to be
Can I nick that idea? I love trying to always. That's really cool. We had that during, well, during DevConnect as well. We had like an open stage at some point for people to just go on stage, do your pitch, and get off. So yeah, it's community round pitch, but town hall is kind of cute. I like the name, and you're right. It's all about defining it, like sort of be, you know, at your own risk and be careful. And crazy times. Do you remember you've been hosting events for like super long time, but I'll always remember the first time I chased you down a rainy Amsterdam street to get a live free or die t-shirt. I was looking at those pictures from that wonderful article from your documentary and seeing all the merch, you know, that we have from all these events and stuff. Like, how important do you think is crypto lifestyle? I'm putting air quotes here because I don't know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, is there for you like something as like a culture around crypto? Like, what is it? Is it the merch that we wear? Like, what's...
Yeah, I think like what you mentioned before, tying back to the previous thing, you mentioned like how most of the people come across these big ads and big sponsorships for like more traditional looking crypto companies, like the centralized one. That's their style. Expensive Super Bowl ads, celebrity endorsement, etc. Mm-hmm. Whereas in crypto, the culture is like marketing is very tricky. You really need to do marketing that is honest and that is thought through and that has community in mind, that doesn't have just like a hard sell at mind. And I think like a couple things that are very specific to crypto culture is that memes are amazing medium and merch is also very popular. So yeah, it's a highly viewable and very merchable community.
Yeah. No, it's funny how we start collecting those items and how they, I don't know, I guess we're still early. So it's also like, it's a little thing that can give us good feelings about a certain project or something we really like and we like to wear afterwards. So, yeah, super cool.
It's great. But, you know, like when there's extreme growth of crypto popularity, then some people even say, like, I'm not going to wear those t-shirts anymore. Like, people stop me and ask me about crypto. So it's kind of funny. Like, sometimes you feel like, oh, this is getting too popular. Maybe I should stop wearing those weird t-shirts. Fair.
Or I would like to be a little bit more anon, and it's a bit too much to have a big E thing on my front of my t-shirt. But it's
a great thing. Like, you for sure have your favorite swag. I think the Live Free Die Hard one is a legendary one from me.
It is a legendary one.
There are just a couple more that I would name, but that one is definitely my favorite.
Let's jump, maybe, because I realize, like, tell me, like, what does a day for you look like right now? Like, tell us about, like, what's a normal day? What are your responsibilities right now?
So right now I'm in a little transition. I'm taking a little breather and a break, winding down for the year. But let's say until December, my everyday looked like... So I did a couple of career transitions, different roles. And the latest one was product management, project management. So I was basically being a PM for a software project that was built specifically to the needs of our DAO. And in there, you basically use the same skills as you use when you organize things. You need to be detailed, structured, you need to plan, you need to follow up, you need to coordinate, you need to facilitate, you need to document, and, you know, like all these things. So I don't think it has changed as much, but it kind of followed a bit more software development structures. And I've been also learning a lot in that way. So lately it's been working on monthly releases and pushing those releases, coordinating with the team internally, doing planning calls, overseeing Kanban tasks, following up. et cetera, et cetera.
So are you saying that working in a DAO is the same thing as working in a normal traditional structure?
I wouldn't say that. Of course, the work is remote, and after COVID, many more organizations outside of crypto have experienced this. We had it quite more native. But I also think that there are a lot of things that the DAO structures can borrow when it comes to best practices. We shouldn't always just like try to reinvent the wheel because we can crash on those details. But there definitely are differences than the traditional companies and the DAOs. And working in the DAO is definitely not boring.
Not boring. So what's the good part of working in a DAO, and what's like the less fun part of working in a DAO? Because I think for a lot of people, this is a completely new way of working, you know, working for a decentralized autonomous organization. How does it work? How do you get paid? How do you get hired? How does that work? I think a lot of people have no clue about what it's like to work for this. They might have heard of the word DAO, but then it's kind of a mystery.
Yeah, and we also like don't have a great definition of what DAO is, so,
true.
You know, to
true.
Begin with, because yeah. It's even younger than the crypto space.
Yeah.
So there are definitely some big advantages when it comes to working for DAO, but there are also some disadvantages. And I also believe that working for DAO is not for everyone. And when you communicate about this, it's very important to be clear, because some people might kind of get lured in and then possibly ending up in making a decision that actually doesn't really suit them well and doesn't really suit that project. And therefore, it's very important to kind of be upfront about the risks and options one has, and the safety net that might be more restricted or limited. For instance, people who have great financial responsibilities, I wouldn't advise them to quit their traditional job and join this space. Or for people who really just enjoy taking their salary check every month and just work 9 to 5 and then forget everything, it might not be the best fit, because you can really get invested in this work, and you can really get like absorbed with it. So it's really, really hard to be that person who can just like switch off and not care completely. So there are some types that don't really fit, but then there's some really awesome advantages, such as that if you just look for a job just to pay your bills, your motivation, your satisfaction from your contribution, and your feeling of making a difference is so much different, because there needs to be a lot more pull from the contributors to join a project than in other organizations. So you actually often feel that you are value aligned with the project you want to work for, and you also feel motivated to come up with like improvements and achieving some success, and you feel like your impact is much greater than elsewhere. So it can be very satisfactory from this point of view, considering we work so many hours of our life. Equally, it's super new, innovative space where the different streams, different sciences, different areas, different industries merge. So you can always, always learn something new. So it's a great way to iterate, experiment, and test your hypothesis. But yeah, it also goes with responsibilities, right? Because you don't have this safety net and guarantees, and you actually have to help build this project that is successful in order to secure your future in this space. So there's also a lot of responsibility.
So do you feel like your personal goals are aligned with your job in a DAO?
Yeah. I don't want to say never, but I cannot see myself working at a bank. But I can see myself working for a DeFi protocol or for a crypto project, because it has some values that I align myself with. And the way I complain about centralized exchanges and institutions going broke is exactly the same issues repeating themselves as we know them from the traditional space. So I hate abuse of power and corruption and all these things. And that's something that I personally feel super repelled by. And I do not want to contribute in that space. So for me, it's quite ideological. And I also believe that people who join this space really need to be like on the mission. They need to know why they're in this space, because it can get hard at the time.
Yeah, no, for sure. At DevConnect, you did an amazing presentation about how to start working in crypto and Web3. And it was a very popular talk. A lot of people came to me afterwards and said how happy they were with that presentation, that it inspired them so much. Could you give us like the TLDR on it, or like, because you mentioned now your job, and I feel like that presentation like was an eye opener for many people.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me there. I'm not really a native speaker, and I'm not that comfortable on the stage, but I felt like there are not that many people who have gone through this period of getting to know the space and kind of going through like finding out what my next thing is, but also hiring and also like sharing with people and helping people to get to the space. So I felt like instead of always giving one-on-one advice, I can just try to put it together and help them with like some starting points they can get inspired by. So I'm really happy it had an impact. And I also had the great conversations towards the end. One of the things I mentioned is that working in this space, it's not for everyone. Kind of try to align the expectations, what one can expect. Kind of wanted to make it clear how different it is from looking for a job, because the job often is not the job listing you come across. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So it's very much about proactive search and proactive things one can do, such as like following the projects, figuring out which one they feel good about, and then starting to like ask questions and interacting with the community, and then basically building up credibility by possibly in the end being someone who is asked, okay, we like you as our super active community member, would you consider being like more of a contributor in this project? We think this role would fit you. So basically kind of like shaping your own career here, which is very, very difficult to come and try to like persuade a tech company that you're the one. You really need a very different credential. So you can actually make yourself up as the best candidate for the job that you are burning for the contributions you want to make. There are a lot of things people do not know. So just being curious and open-minded and motivated is really good. And, you know, we always keep saying we're so early, and then some people think, oh, I'm so late. You're never late. The longer you wait, the more miserable you get in your current situation, current role, the more ready you are. So I don't think it's ever late. Like, there are advantages and disadvantages. When the market is crashing, you can focus more on building. When the market is pumping, you get distracted by a lot of things that are unnecessary, a lot of noise. So, you know, if you're here for the good reason, the chances are you're going to find the right project. Of course, the funds might be more tight and might be a little bit more challenging. But, you know, if you really are passionate about something and you're persuaded this is what you want to do, then there's no one stopping you.
No, good one. So to anybody listening so far and who wants to get in, just jump in. Jump into your favorite project Discord or channels and just start somewhere. Just get to know people and attend events, I would say, is also a really good tip to get to put a face on the contributors that of a giant Discord. Sometimes it's a bit difficult. But starting remote is also fine.
Joining your local meetup, taking the time you need. No wonder they call it rabbit hole. If it sucks you in, you're in. It's really hard to come back.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's when you were being on stage, you had like three cameras pointing at you. So you were one of the only speakers that had its own like media crew. What was going on? It was kind of intense. They were like, okay, she's talking. Woo, we're here.
Yeah, it was quite funny. Again, a very new experience to me. So around January, I had this guy reach out to me saying that they work for DR, which is Danish Radio and Television. I live in Copenhagen, by the way, so that's the explanation. They were basically saying that they got a project to do a documentary for like a younger audience for the national radio television. And it's going to follow like a couple of stories of a couple of people in this space. And I was like, awesome. I can give you some really good tips on who you can do this with. And I can give you feedback and I can support you in like checking if the definitions or whatever, if you don't feel confident about it. And somehow I just got talked into being one of them. And I was like, okay. So I'm going to do this for awareness sake. And I decided that the angle I want to show and that doesn't get a lot of spotlight is the community I'm part of and how important the community is. So how can I better show them the community than taking them to Amsterdam, actually showing them DevConnect?
Yeah. Do you think that this is the type of stories actually that can once again inspire people to join the space and get curious? And
I really hope so, but of course there'll be people who'll be just chasing number go up, and you know, there's nothing I can do about it. But with my story, I try to contribute with this angle so people just don't think it's all about trading and like jumping on the bandwagon, etc. But it is also about like some greater satisfaction than just getting your salary check.
So what was it for you? How did you start? How what made you join crypto?
Huh. This story is quite funny. I had really hard time. I think since kindergarten, I hated that question. Like, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Fair enough.
And then came the college, right? So what do I want to study? And then I was thinking, okay, I want to do something creative. Let's study marketing or like advertisement. Before I even started my bachelor's in marketing, I worked like a summer job at an advertisement agency. And I was like, oh my God, I never want to work in this industry. Well, this is terrible.
Okay. Good on you for doing the internship before throwing yourself into studies. Yeah. Very good.
So I finished. It was like kind of like media studies, journalism, marketing, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I had this opportunity to go study for my master's abroad, and I always wanted to do that. So I'm from Slovakia, and I ended up in Denmark. And they had this crazy long master's degree called Culture, Communication, and Globalization. And it had like a stream within called Market, Communication, and Consumption. So I just like went all crazy.
Wait, say it again. Culture, Communication, and Globalization, right?
Yes.
Specialization in market consumption? No.
Market communication and consumer studies. So basically, imagine anywhere that you have the overlap of the three areas of the culture, communication, and thanks to globalization. So it's like basically anything. Instead of going deeper into that field, I just like went all over. And that helped me to explore the different things like consumption upside down, like prosumption. Consumers that are actually producers, or ethical consumption, fair trade, etc., etc. And you know, because I was always like going against the stream, I just want people to persuade and to buy more products. So I was kind of looking at like what else is out there. And I think like this word open really has it for me. So open innovation.
Okay.
How can you innovate without doing it behind closed doors in the team? Within your organization, how can you crowdsource some new ideas for products, etc.? And of course came the open source and the interest in open source, then went to with my friend to open source days.
Nice.
And learned about like Bitcoin, Torchain, and you know, all these like DIY 3D printer people, etc., etc. And I heard about that. And then it was time for me to find a job after I graduated. So I was trying different things. And then I came across this internship at the Bitcoin startup. And I was like, Oh yeah, Bitcoin. So I spent 3 days just Googling all I could do about Bitcoin, and then I just went for that interview.
Wow. Wow. And that was your first job in
That
crypto.
was my first grown-up job, yes. I
Wow.
did like internship, but it was for public sector, and it was like it was a limited time. They just take a new intern, so it was just to like get a little experience. So this was my first internship, when then I just continued working there, and I've been there for 4 years.
Whoa. So you, yeah, fell into it, never looked back.
Yeah, and I literally came there and said, "Look, I am not technical, not a developer, but I have these other assets that you need because it's exact opposite of what you have right now. So hire me."
That's a good sell. That's a good sell. It's like I am not. So again, crypto is not just filled with technical people. There's also, I would say, a bunch of people like us that are educators, people focus, gatherers. We digest information, we can organize things. So very, very, very important skills, actually. Very in demand as
Absolutely.
well. Very in demand.
You need those developers because it's very technical space, but you need someone to market, you need someone to build partnership, you need someone to educate, you need someone to build a community.
Yep.
And many projects don't think about it in the beginning,
No.
but as the space evolves, there's more need for more specialized talents to join in.
What about then your, so you had this internship and then what was the next step after that first crypto internship, Bitcoin internship?
So it was basically a startup that did two things. One was payment processing for merchants, so it was
Okay.
B2B. And the second one was basically a brokerage platform. So customers could send bank transfer and get crypto, or send crypto and get, or they could also use credit card. And that was a merger of two companies. And I joined there to do online marketing for that startup. And I've been there for a long time. I've did PR, I did social media, I built the blog,
Whoa.
we redid the website. I've been doing like all these comms. But you know, we went through a couple of the ups and downs in terms of prices, and I could just see like the digital money of Bitcoin, the promise. It just never got fulfilled. And of course, while I was at this company, I was also very interested to, you know, like seek out events that have something to do. And I also have been doing events for that, organizing people to come to speakers, etc. But also just like local meetups and learning about projects. And with my boyfriend, we went to a Copenhagen Ethereum meetup.
Aha.
And he was like, "Oh, there's this guy. He came from China. He just got some funds and he's going to present this project." And there was Rune talking about Maker.
Damn.
And I remember I was so pissed after that meetup because I did not understand a thing.
Wow.
I was like so frustrated, like I'm in this space quite a long time and I'm still not getting this. And I think it was around summer 17, and it was Sai. That was like the proto version of Dai that they were just beginning with. So yeah, I remember I was like super frustrated, like how can this be? I felt so stupid sitting there, like I didn't get a thing. But yeah, year after that, I was already organizing meetups for Maker in the same group.
Wow. You said something very interesting. You said that by working at that startup, you felt like Bitcoin had failed. Can
To
you
be a
expand?
digital money, yeah.
Yeah, to
And here's a
how?
stable coin that's decentralized, that's opening an office, and that's why I decided to join Maker. And I
Was
joined
it
as their community lead.
due to the high fees on the Bitcoin network? Like what did you think of it, or the volatility? What
It's
for
the
you?
volatility which stable coins solve. It was like merchants were not willing to sell something that when they have to do their accounting monthly, they might lose money on it. They were not trusting it. And people who hold Bitcoin, if they felt like, oh, it's gonna have more value, I don't want to spend it on the beers right now, etc. So, you know, it just kind of failed that promise of becoming money. It just became an asset you want to hold and you want to invest in. So I could see just payments not really working out, and I could see the case for stablecoin. So that's also why I decided to join.
Wow. Do you use cryptocurrencies as a user? Do you use them for payments?
Yeah, I think my favorite one is Gitcoin Grants.
Sorry, is?
Gitcoin Grants.
Oh, Gitcoin Grants. Yeah.
Because there you can also like try different types of checkout experiences. I think that's a really cool one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to ask, what do you think of the shifts that you've been through at Maker? You were part of the early days when Maker still was a foundation. And then you are now in a core unit, Maker SCS. And what do you think of all of those different steps and now also the future of Maker with Endgame?
Okay, I'm happy you caught that one as well, because it's like a constant
what?
Evolution.
Yeah.
I'm happy you caught the Endgame as well, because yeah, let's see what's gonna what's
I mean
gonna
you've seen a lot. You will have seen a lot. So like let's maybe first chunk, let's say foundation days. How was that? How was the early days of working at Maker and doing events and
yeah.
How was that?
So I actually joined around the time that they were just forming the foundation and just starting the Danish office. It was summer 18. And that was really great because I got to sit at the office with other people who are like-minded.
Yeah.
And Gustav, he was doing BD with me and he started around that time. So we traveled a lot to a lot of events. It was crazy. It was like a lot of events.
Yeah.
So that was really exciting, meeting the Ethereum community around the globe.
Yeah.
It really exploded. Sometimes I wasn't really at the office because I was all the time traveling.
Yeah.
So that was a great experience. But all in all, Foundation, you know, had like teams, had like a bit more streamlined ways of doing things,
mm-hmm.
Had like head of this, head of that, so you can always go to a person. But then after some time, the project was evolving towards that full decentralization it was always talking about. We delivered multi-collateral DAI. We delivered the infrastructure that was needed for a community to be able to control the project and steer it to the future. So like the decentralized governance, the MIP framework, and
yeah.
other tools. So it was just about the time that we dissolved the foundation and we let the community to decide how they want this to function. And so came the framework of core units, which are basically teams that propose themselves to do a specific work for the DAO for a given budget. And again, I joined someone that I felt that I will both have a really good collaboration with, contributing to. I like the idea, I like the impact I could make. That's basically Walter, who came up with the idea for SES. It stands for Sustainable Ecosystem Scaling. And being able to be part of the team that actually solves the problem for us to scale effectively, that was a great opportunity. I also kind of switched from doing the marcoms, the community building and the events and marketing stuff, to do this project management thing. So that was also quite a big transition, and I'm happy I made that. We did really exciting project about the decentralized workforce research, and that's also some of the outcomes of that what I share with people when it comes to advising them on a career, because I had an opportunity to be involved in the project that researched this. And currently it's this software project that I was talking about.
Yeah.
It's basically a transparency dashboard that helps everyone in the DAO, but also the public. But right now, probably it's mostly relevant for different delegates and MKR token voters, but equally for the core units themselves to be able to communicate transparently and report their expenses, etc. But it's evolving towards becoming like more of a operational platform for the entire DAO. So that's the current thing. And as we are working on this, on monthly iterations and deployments, we are transitioning into a new development of MakerDAO, the endgame, and the MetaDAOs or SubDAOs, or how do we call them right
now? Yeah, Meta. What is it? It was MIP. For those who, before you said MIP, for those who don't know, I'll put, yes. Sometimes I put some text and stuff, but like Maker and
improvement proposals.
Exactly. It's like an EIP. Yeah, for the it's similar semantics that we use in the space. For those that don't know, what was it? A couple of months ago, Rune, the founder or one of the early co-founders that you mentioned that you saw presenting in Copenhagen way back. Well, you can maybe explain it. Like, what is Endgame in your opinion? Like, what is this? What is this 3.0 phase for Maker right now?
Oh, I wish I had the best TLDR. Actually, I think we're still figuring out how to exactly communicate this. But it's a transition from the core units as we knew them into having some sort of a smaller core team that is tied to protocol, like some essential functions of the protocol, and then having other sub-DAOs, which can provide some services. And then you can also have an ecosystem actor, which could be a company that services other DAOs or other companies providing a specific service.
Does that mean that Maker SES becomes one of the Meta DAOs?
That is one theory there.
Can so it's not implemented,
ecosystem,
right?
Ecosystem actor. The vote to transition to this has been voted
passed.
Passed. But the actual transition, it's being figured out.
Yeah, because the vote was pretty tricky. That's from what I've seen. It's like there was a bit of controversy there about, something of only 15% of Maker were used to vote, and 2/3 of those were actually Ruin's or his delegates. So it's basically Ruin coming up with a new roadmap for Maker, and then voting himself or his project and passing it that way. I mean, did that frustrate you? Did you feel like, or were you just like, oh no, this is how it's supposed to happen? Like, how did you feel about it?
I think that I'm one of these people that actually don't have like 100% insight into everything endgame, because I was really just heads down making sure we keep up with the promises we make to the things we deliver. So I don't think I'm like the best informed person. I understand there is always a frustration to how things happen. But nevertheless, since this is the winning proposal, and it is something that is a long-term kind of visionary thing, I understand that the issue of executing this is actually like breaking it down into smaller parts and discussing how can this be done. And I think that's a big advantage of the people that are in my team that actually can think like tactically how this can be executed and how can we implement it into the new versions of this dashboard we're working on so that we can support the transition. So
yeah, somehow now the dashboard is really needed. Like you mentioned that you worked on a transparency dashboard, like to enable core units to work. Maybe those core units become MetaDAOs. They might have their own committee, their own token, their own strategies. So they'll need even more communication.
Yeah.
So I can only see that tool being very, very, very needed.
Yeah, in comparison to the foundation where you could stay with one website, one social media channel, one blog, etc., now you need like so many different platforms for this, so many different actors to communicate. But if you provide them with like an operational platform where they can just use the same structure and push the information that's relevant to them, to the people that that really need to know this information in a simplified environment, then that can really help them. It can also help them to communicate their progress on the transition.
Yeah.
And it can also help them to gain the trust of the voters that vote for their proposals.
Yeah.
One way we are to reconfigure how the work is being done is instead of focusing on one team delivering a specific work, to focus on a project that more different actors within the ecosystem can team up on and to propose to do. So project-based budgeting is one of the things, but also transition to meta-DAOs or sub-DAOs or what we end up calling them is another thing that we can implement in the next iterations of the dashboard. To begin with, the dashboard has been really strictly focusing on the situation we were in when the bear market hit, and we really need to be well informed about our spending and our economies. So it was very focused on financial reporting. Now it's becoming much more of a collaboration and transition tool.
I can imagine that's going to be very central. So for you moving forward, I just saw this new semantics of there's three types of birds you can be right now. Have you thought of it? Are you like more of a pigeon? Are you more of an eagle? Or are you more of a phoenix? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I know that's going to sound really weird for maybe people that are not familiar.
Yeah. So I think of the birds that you just mentioned, you just have to think of it like graduation stages.
Yeah.
So you start as a pigeon, then you become an eagle, and then you burst into flames.
Something like that.
And but there were other two birds pre endgame discussions, and that was whether you're a dove or you're a hawk.
Okay.
Whether you want to invest in growth or whether you want to cut down the costs and be very simplistic.
Okay, wait, the dove was invest in growth and the hawk was cut, or was it the opposite?
Yeah, I hope I'm not messing it up, but yeah.
Okay.
So you could have a different approaches because you could see like there are different outcomes on voting on the budgets for different core units in the past, etc., etc.
So now which bird do you feel that? Which bird are you right now? Or would you want to be? Or do you identify the most with?
I think it was just to exemplify the different stages one has to go through. So in order to be Phoenix, you need to start as a pigeon.
Okay, I see. Oh, I thought it was like moving. Okay, so just for those who don't know what we're talking about, pigeon is like low regulatory risk with some exposure to real world asset as collateral for DAI. But that the peg for DAI, i.e. $1, one DAI, would remain over the 2.5. next year. So again, endgame is like a big roadmap, and there's different phases. And then eagle, I think, is DAI with a completely free floating rate, so no more like fixed peg, with negative target rate, so to ensure more stability. And the phoenix stage is like zero exposure to real world asset and the collateral, with therefore achieving, supposedly or according to the narrative, achieving at that point maximum censorship resistance for DAI. Do you agree with the TLDR of the pigeon, eagle,
much better
phoenix?
Than mine. Much better than mine.
Oh, it's like, it's so I must say, like, it's so hard to keep track of all the projects. You can't, like, anybody that's out, it's really hard to keep up with every organization, and then what's happening in the org and the drama and the politics of each of these. But yeah, how do you feel about Maker and DAI moving forward? At least like you've seen it all. This is not, you're still like, you're not saying, okay, this is it, like 16 or I don't know, 8 MetaDAOs. No, I'm not getting into that. You're thinking, let's see what Maker and DAI becomes.
Yeah, I think also just like transition into core unit could have been like anxiety kind of triggering. But I'm happy I did that jump. And, you know, some of the best things that happened for me is me pushing out myself out of the comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying everything's going to be pink and smooth, but I'm really excited to see where it comes. And you know, it's really hard for Maker to look elsewhere for inspiration because there are really not other examples that have been through this before.
We shall not mention the, let's say, two other, I don't know, There's been many different iterations on decentralized stablecoins in the crypto ecosystem. Some have burnt into flames earlier this year.
But thinking of like DAOs and transitioning and growing pains and addressing those growing pains, I remember that when we switched to CoreUnit, that we actually had a lot of calls with other projects that want to do this transition and were asking us for input. We were talking with Shapeshift, we were talking with Gitkind, we were talking with many other ones. And we always try to inspire them like how we do this. So I always feel like Maker is more like passing on the knowledge and learnings, whereas we're not going and asking people, okay, so how should we do this? Because there hasn't been really many people that went through this that could advise us or give us some knowledge sharing in that sense. So I feel like everything we do, it's with a certain level of risk. And we might be smarter afterwards, but it's really hard to foresee future just yet. And a lot of decisions that have been made have been to further decentralize the protocol to remove the risks. So that's...
Do you feel like this year, when we saw everything that happened with Tornado Cash and OFAC and Flashbots and, you know, certain ETH transactions getting, well, not censored, but at least relayers not wanting to pass certain transactions, do you think that sort of motivated Rune maybe? Or just did that have an influence on Endgame and wanting to move away from centralized backed stablecoins? I don't know. I'm just like throwing spaghetti at the wall right now. I'm just trying to imagine, you know, I don't know.
I think it would be more surprising if there would be zero reaction or response to that kind of development in the space. And I also feel like generally the DeFi developers are already like quite more conscious about their privacy and stuff like that. So even if things are evolving in the direction that you don't agree with and you don't think it's right, you need to somehow come up with solutions that can bring you a little bit more security in terms of what you're doing or like ensure the longevity of the project you're part of. So I would not say that it had nothing to do with it. Mm. It definitely must have had an influence, but maybe there were also other practical reasons for this. This proposal to be brought up, because as I'm saying, we cannot always figure out everything from the first try. It's still a very nascent environment. There are a lot of developments that become precedents because it hasn't happened before. I really hope that, you know, although many people from the outside, from the mainstream, think that this is just space that's crawling with scams and hacks and everything, that they also understand that they're growing pains. And if there are a lot of hacks in DeFi early on, then we learn from it. And when we're very significant and scaled largely to the mainstream levels of Visa, etc., we already have gone through those pains and we figured out the weaknesses we have. So I still consider a lot of these things as being early and having to go through these growing pains and figuring out how we can become more resilient.
Definitely. And if it's not the bad press that we get from horrible fraudsters out there, we obviously have, like you just mentioned, growing pains, and it's painful and difficult. Did you personally like voted on this proposal, on this MIP? How often do you vote on these MIPs? Like, how much do you vote? Like, how do you vote at all? I don't know. I feel like that's a very personal question. I realize now, like, it's like asking me if I vote on every like Swiss elections, and sometimes I skip one. Like, it's like, or sometimes I abstain if I don't know about something. Or do you try to follow all the MIPs? Like, how do you interact with the voting proposal?
Yeah. I must admit, I haven't voted on this one, and that is also because I didn't feel like I have enough insights to everything, but I also feel that in our team, we have people who have been really diving deep into it, and it was really helpful to make sure that there is some sort of maybe not through the governance, but through like trying to influence how this project, if it becomes successful, becomes executed, and that will be done the best possible way we can support, then that was important for me.
Again, from an outsider perspective, it's always interesting to see basically the proposal going through, but actually the execution of it is still to be decided on and to be defined. It's more like we vote on this general idea strategy, but then the details are still up to people like you that are doing the day-to-day groundwork.
It was around, I think it was 1 month ago, around Eat Gathering in Barcelona, that some of my teammates, they've been actually hosting.
Shout out to Tadu and to that conference. I heard a lot of good things about Eat Gathering. Sorry.
So there was actually a MetaDAO and Endgame offsite where more different actors from the space, including delegates, including coordinate facilitators, et cetera, have met up together to discuss, figure out the questions, the big question marks, and discuss like how this could go forward. So there is definitely a progress going on. And things are solidifying, and that's really great to see people showing the interest and people putting the time and work to figuring out how to get this executed successfully.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be a new era for Maker and for DAI moving forward. It's really, and it's interesting, and we'll see. We can only just stick around and see what's going to happen, how the market reacts, how the DAO reacts as well to all of this. So a lot of crazy things also upcoming, I can see, for Maker. What are you excited about for next year?
Next year, I'm gonna take a little break.
Okay.
I think it's the first one since I joined the space. I never took sabbatical or anything.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be interesting for me to observe the space from an outsider point of view, keeping up with what's happening, but not being like day-to-day involved with the actual work. I'm excited about that. I'm starting my maternity leave this week, so that's gonna be
congratulations. And hey, we don't have maternity leave, right, in crypto? Like how is that?
Oh, that was also quite interesting to arrange. It took only 5 months.
Oh my goodness.
And there are not many cases of this, so I hope I can be one of those that contributes to it. In fact, I haven't mentioned this group of really sweet people that I'm also part of called People Upskilled, which are people who work in different DAOs and crypto projects to do decentralized HR and to do contributor experience, and are in one way or another involved with this. And this is also one of the topics which I think could make a big difference to ease up on the anxiety levels for women, young women, to consider joining this space and actually feeling somehow safe in this space. And then, that will be a big game changer. Because I think if there's something that makes a difference, then this could be the one thing. So I would love to dive into this a bit more.
Might be an interesting next talk for 2025.
Oh, yes.
You know, post everything and explaining the, how do you work for a DAO and also get a maternity leave.
And it's a really difficult decision if you're like workaholic, and if you're really dedicated to your project, it's also like emotional rupture between the two things you want to do and how to combine the two. So it's also figuring out where do you set the line.
indeed. And I think we're a similar age. We're close. We are in similar moments, I think, in life where we think about these things. And I thought it was beautiful at DEF CON to see so many children. Actually, there was a lot of people that brought their kids, and I thought that's amazing. You know, it's not just, you know, the top-notch contributors, but it's also the extended family that's there and involved and learning. And I can only see myself grabbing our children and dragging them or to everything that we do, basically, to meetups, to conferences. So I look forward to seeing your little ones as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's really great to also consider this when you register to some crypto events nowadays. You also get that kind of question. And if it's possible, they try to see what the interest is in terms of helping with childcare, etc., and fulfill that or support that. So it's really nice to see.
how were you asked? What was it like?
I think DEF CON had it, and I'm sure that ETH Denver has it. I think it's just like yes/no question. Like, are you considering to bring children to the events? Would you be interested in childcare or any?
I am putting it down. I'm trying to get the best practices out there.
Okay, then I have another tip for you.
Okay, what's another tip that I need to implement for you, Sam?
A puppy room.
A puppy room?
Yes.
That's not a thing.
It is. ETH Denver had a room where they had puppies from shelter, and
Stop.
You could go and you could pet them. I never made the line when I was going there, but I think that's such a... It's better than the Zen room.
Okay, I cannot guarantee the puppy room. We're already using all the space to make sure that hackers have enough space to hack, and they need
the
hacking
priority.
For. But another animal that I saw was at ECC Paris this year, and there was just like a horse. Someone had a horse in the center of Paris. Like, sorry, not a horse, like a pony. It was like a small pony that was just parked in front of ECC. You couldn't touch it though, so it's not a proper like petting situation, but there was an animal. I thought it was kind of cute. Oh my god, a puppy room. I can't believe it.
They're from shelter. They get some attention. People get some endorphins.
Okay, I'm writing it down, but I can't guarantee it. Like, that one's like far. That's insane.
I keep pitching it to everyone. I told
room.
The DEFCON guys, like, eat them or hit it.
Fine. I guess they have set the bar really high. Standards are insane.
I'd rather do this than go to a yacht trip or something fancy, you know. Like.
Well, now we're going to do the, I think, what? So, you know, Maria and Matteo are organizing Spaghetteth right after ETH Dam.
Mm-hmm.
So we're promoting this and talking about it as like a crypto European summer, basically. You start in Amsterdam, you do the hackathon, and then we all go to Naples together. And I think that'd be super fun to have, like, something going on in Italy, I think. The rest of the team is pretty pumped about checking out Naples, and maybe there's something fun there. We'll see.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Oh, my God, puppy room. That's, like... Oh, my God. Okay, anything else other than a puppy room, which is an insane thing to have, but...
For events.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go into this event organizer strict mode.
Yeah.
I think it's always nice if you do event to think about what the takeaway is for the person, what can they bring home with them.
Mm.
That's always like the biggest thing. So I love that people were giving, like, I think at DEF CON you could mint various NFTs and various layer twos and mainnet. I love giving pop-ups to people that come to the event because it's their first NFT. And, you know, I don't have understanding for all NFT use cases, but I love this one.
Yeah, me too. Pop-ups awesome.
Yeah.
Shout out to Patricio.
So, yes.
Doing a good
hey,
job.
Patricio. So, yeah, I think, like, have something that people come home with, not just, like, just another T-shirt, but also have something meaningful that kind of unlock that aha moment in them.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, for those who don't know, PoEPs are a proof of attendance protocol. They're NFTs, but they have an emotional value. They don't have a price on them. And I think that's what makes them truly unique. I actually mint them for every meetup we've had for the last year. I've been minting PoEPs, and I think it's like a nice something. It's crypto, but it's not insane, and it's on a layer two, so it doesn't have the high fees. So it's like it's a good onboarding tool, I think, for many people, and app is easy to manage and stuff like that. So
I have a pro tip for Poaps.
Yeah.
In terms of looking for the best job for you in the space.
Uh-huh.
This could be your crypto passport. This is how OG, how involved in community you are if you show your Poaps.
Okay. Then we're just, yeah, so I think you mean like to use Poaps to sort of do proof of attendance or for people to get in? Is that what you mean? Like you have to show a certain Poap to be able to get into the conference?
What I'm saying is amazing memorabilia from going to event is your Poap.
Mm.
But it's also like your OG passport in crypto. You show how many Poaps you have. And if you're trying to get the job in the crypto, mm-hmm. I think it's much more helpful to show off your Poaps than is to show off your CV. So that's a pro tip right there.
Oh, interesting. So using your Poaps as your CV. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So make sure to collect your Poap to whatever conference you attend to prove that you were there, to prove your attendance to something.
Yeah.
Very nice. So now that we've talked about our favorite Poaps and the importance of them, maybe you'd like to share something special of yourself, something that we can remember you by.
Okay. There are many things, so yeah. I just picked this random one. This is my useless machine. I like to have it on my desk. It's basically...
I was like, oh, that's a pretty node.
Like... Yeah. It's just on and off.
Yeah.
And you can do this forever until the batteries run out.
Is that a finger that pops
out? Yeah, it's a finger.
Gosh, it's creepy. And I like the sound it makes.
Yeah. And I got it at open source days. I had to assemble it myself.
Aww.
And I had a lot of fun showing it to people. And I have it on my desk. And I need to remember take breaks, or I need to make a mental stop, pause between the things.
Yeah.
So I just try to turn on the machine.
Oh, that's lovely.
And maybe easy button is easier in some situations. But you know, crypto can feel like this sometimes. So
yeah.
You just keep, you just have to keep on pushing the on button.
Wow, I love
until
that.
Until people get it.
I love it. What's your way of keeping actually a good, healthy balance in crypto? I think that's something we should talk a bit more as well. That's like the sort of the longevity of being in crypto. Like, how did you manage to balance not having a 9-to-5 job, working in a DAO, going through price up and downs? Like, what's the key to your happiness and balance?
Yeah. You know, this meme of like people going on this fun ride on this crazy roller coaster.
Yes.
And they're like meeting the zombie looking, the skeleton looking ones.
Yes.
How long you've been in this space, you know? And it's the same one with the train ride where you have the people looking one way, being very optimistic, and then the other way being very gloomy and thinking about the same thing. I think it just comes with time. I was also terrible at first. I started working at startup and I was working weekends and I was taking on things, and I was just overworking myself. And I had to learn with time how to take care of myself. And unfortunately, often it just comes that way, unless you have someone who can tell you the warning signs earlier. So unfortunately, mental health is often overlooked, especially if you don't have an office you share with your colleagues, and if you don't have like set working hours. So you just literally need to learn to take care of yourself and to realize like you can't do everything, and not everything can be perfect. So, you know, sometimes you just need to take a bit more easy, give yourself a break, look at it from the distance. I realized that, you know, it's not always about like working, but sometimes saving up enough vacation time and actually spending like 2 or 3 weeks by absolutely taking a break can really help you recharge and reset your mind. Because sometimes you just get like into this impulsive checking Twitter and checking bird mail and checking everything. And you just need to learn how to control yourself and you just need to learn how to use your free time for the quality time that you want to have. So it just comes with experience, I'm sorry to say, or it comes with a good friend with a good advice.
It's hard.
Yeah.
In short, it's hard. And if anybody is struggling out there, just don't hesitate once again to, I know it's hard when you're struggling, to reach out, really, to let your friends know, let the people you're working with know, and communicate it, and don't just suffer alone, because we're actually all in this together. We really are. And some people are better than others at managing massive stress and 16 platforms and DAO drama and crypto Twitter while doing a podcast. And it's just, sometimes it gets a bit much. Not trying to turn off people from getting into crypto, but it is difficult.
You need the discipline.
Yeah.
Especially for remote work. And I don't know, if you're a kind of person like me, then you really enjoy from time to time to go into events with real people in the same little situations, that you actually get to like relax and also just talk about something else for a change, or like kind of be on the same page. It really recharges me when I'm at a conference with my crowd. So that is a one way. And we're not just the crazy people dressed up in unicorn overalls drinking at fancy parties. We also need to let the steam off somehow.
Yeah, so agree.
It's important.
I agree. Do you have any last words to share about your experience and you as one of the humans of crypto to our audience?
Well, there's nothing extremely special about me. And look at me, my first grown-up job is in crypto. I pay my bills from earning it in crypto. I haven't cheated anyone yet. It's possible to go the honest way. And it is possible to actually always contribute something extra than just benefiting your own project. And you get a lot of in exchange for it. So as long as, you know, I get the motivation from this, I get what I'm getting back, I'll keep contributing to the space. I'm really happy I had the opportunity to share with others how I'm enjoying this space, and hopefully it will motivate the others. And I'm always happy to help you out to figure out that question that's in the way for you, to figuring out if this is for you or not.
Amazing. Lenka, thank you so much for being here, for being so open and for sharing your story. I look forward to one day seeing your community in Copenhagen, seeing your next step into this crazy space. And and just thank you. Thank you for your time and for sharing. I'll make sure to put all your links to documentaries, past talks, People Ops Guild down there in the description, so that people can go and learn more and can get to know you more as well.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Eleanor. It's an honor that someone wants to listen to this story while there's so much information overload out there. If any of the links are relevant, I'm happy to elaborate on those. And thank you so much for the work you're doing, because it's really awesome. And when you're in Copenhagen, we need to have you as a speaker.
So that would be fun. I just thought of it. For people who have been listening till the end, the crazy ones, we should make them a pop. So let's think of a code right now, and then they can like DM us on like Twitter or like Telegram, and I'll make sure to mint them a poep for having listened. Although this is so fun, there's only a few people will be, but this will be nice to mint a poep for those people. I'll make a special Humans of Crypto Lenka edition.
Useless machine.
Perfect. DM me on Twitter, useless machine.
And no space.
No space.
No capitals.
And you'll get your poep for listening all the way. Have a wonderful
evening. Thank you.
Evening.
This was fun.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.